is Taking Aim with
Roush Unman
and Maya Schoen, and we're glad to be with you for the WBAI Fund Drive. We've prepared a very special premium. It's a 2-CD set on Haiti. The first CD contains an edited version of two shows from 2004, The Ongoing War Against the Haitian People, which documents the history of Haiti and particularly the reasons for the demobilization of the Haitian people in response to the coups that took place against Jean-Bertrand Aristide and how he participated in that demobilization. The second CD is An Unnatural Catastrophe, The U.S. Crucifixion of Haiti, and these are edited versions of the programs from this January, again revisiting the history of Haiti, but more than that, discussing the ongoing assault against the people of Haiti, what we call the U.S. Crucifixion of Haiti. That's a $75 contribution. We're going to play some very moving excerpts today from the first CD, The Ongoing War Against the Haitian People. The number to call is 212-209-2950. Again, 212-209-2950. Those of you listening from overseas, remember there's the WBAI website, www.wbai.org, on which you can make contributions. Those of you calling from all over the United States, get on the phone, 212-209-2950. Your contribution not only brings you this very special premium, our gift to you, this 2-CD set, it also supports WBAI, which enables us to come into your homes and into your cars to reach you each and every week. This is our ninth year with Taking Aim. Again, 212-209-2950. We would not be here were it not for WBAI. Ralph.
Well, I want to emphasize here that the crisis in Haiti is the continuation of an imperial plan of devastation. It's not specific to Haiti, but Haiti is a kind of concentration of the entire genocidal assault upon the people, the vulnerable peoples of the world, those who are exploited, those who work for a living, those who are the target of colonial and imperial dominion. And Haiti concentrates that reality for us. But in the process of elucidating what is involved in the ongoing war against the Haitian people, we want to bring an update, a critically important update, brothers and sisters, of our mother courage, the crisis that is facing all of us through the persecution and prosecution of Lynn Stewart. Because the case of Lynn Stewart is about the rationale for the war on terror, the war against the people of Haiti, the so-called war on terror, the fake war on terror, the war on terror, which is a government operation designed to create the rationale for the wars of predation and the assault upon the rights of all of our people. We have with us Ralph Poynter, Ralph, Lynn's companion, Lynn's husband, Lynn's political companion as well, her colleague, her comrade, to update us on the current situation with respect to Lynn.
Before we go to Ralph, I want to again give the phone number. You can call at any time during this update and again while we are playing the excerpts. 212-209-2950. Hi, Ralph.
Hi, how are you doing? And thank you. And I would like to say to all of the people that out there in WBAI land, send money and get this, what do we call them, premium.
Right.
Because what makes this premium different than all of the other Haiti stories that you get is the timeliness of it. The date was years before the earthquake. And you can see how it ties in to what's happening to America, to the Haitians, and why the Haitian people were so vulnerable to a natural disaster, because they've been struck by an unnatural disaster, which is United States, Canada, and France. It's like looking into the future when you look into the program or you listen to the premium on Haiti. that Ralph and Maya have put together, because it was ahead of everyone else's. And you can see their abilities to diagnose what's happening to all of us. So spend your money, get the premium, and support BAI. I know we're in a struggle over BAI, but if there is no BAI, there will be nothing to struggle for. So I'm hoping that everyone pitches in, gets the various premiums being offered, whatever their interest is, but especially this program on Haiti. It knocked me out at the time it was given. It knocks me out now. And as I listen to Taking Aim every week, I just get you get goose pimples, so much information. If you were to get every program, and you can get them free just by dialing WBAI, Taking Aim, and you can hear these programs. Maybe I shouldn't say they could do it free, Ralph.
It points out that WBAI is listener-sponsored. It depends on each and every one of us. And it is WBAI that has been bringing you an update, a weekly update on the persecution and prosecution, as Ralph puts it, of Lynn Stewart. So, Ralph, let's go now to the current situation with Lynn and her incarceration at the MCC, the Metropolitan Correction Center in New York.
As we speak, Lynn cannot speak to us because she has a three-month ban on use of the phones. And they had started an email, and she had just gotten into that, and, of course, she's banned from email also. And the basis of this ban is that her cellmate is accused of having made a phone call to me about Lynn's medical situation. And I'd just like to say I was always very upset about Lynn's medical situation. Being a political person and knowing the history of the American prison system and knowing that we on the outside are fighting presently to have decent health care, and now translate that to the prisons. What do you think they're getting there in terms of health care? Think of the food we are fighting to get out here, and then think of the food that is given in prison. Two different worlds. And from the beginning, we were nervous about Lynn, being that she had a scheduled operation in Lenox Hill Hospital December 7th. She had to report to prison December 5th. Then the question is, was she going to get her operation in the prison? And I fought against that tooth and nail, and our youngest daughter, and I can proudly say our daughter, the brilliant doctor, got involved and said, under no circumstances can this happen. We had asked for a furlough, I had suggested a furlough so that she could get an operation, but that was put aside. And I can say presently that Lynn is feeling well. I spoke to her yesterday. I had about an hour and a half visit, and she is herself. And when I say herself, she's giving me orders, and she's talking about what the lawyers must do, and she is appealing, making the second step of whatever process there is in the jail to change this situation. I think the second step is an appeal to the warden.
And Ralph, would it help if each and every one of us wrote to the MCC officials to protest this action?
Yes, I would think so, that if you wrote to MCC, and I'm sitting and I have my books in a mess here, and I have the woman's name, but if you can't write to MCC, write to Lynn herself. They will get the message. With the increase, I don't know what's happening on the phones here.
No, you're coming through fine, Ralph.
Okay. Attention, Miss Hill, Counselor Hill, 2 South, MCC, and then it's the same address, 150 Park Row, New York, New York, 1007. So
yes.
If you were to write to Counselor Hill on 2 South, MCC, 150 Park Row, New York, New York, 1007, or just write directly to Lynn Stewart, L-Y-N-N-E, Stewart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T, MCC, 150 Park Row, New York, 1007, and the number is 53504-054. And now back to Lynn's health condition. She is in good health, and the ban that she is suffering was due to a phone call that was made to me concerning her health. She had gone to the hospital for the third time, and she hadn't come back. Now, hospital and medicine. The day that she was supposed to show up in the hospital, we came there with her books and her medicine, and we were told at the door, come back tomorrow, only bring one book and don't bring medicine. Just call us and give us the information as the medicine you're taking. We will provide it. The day she came in, 1 hour before she was to surrender, they called and said, bring the medicine. Fortunately, we live a half hour from the prison. I was able to do that, get the medicine, bring it back before she surrendered. When she surrendered, some doctor decided that the medicine she was taking was not correct, and they changed it. And that's where it began. And she got ill. Then she had to go out to the hospital. And I won't get into all of what was involved, going to the hospital, shackled, et cetera. And,
well, it's a prison hospital,
it's
Ralph.
It's a prison
and,
hospital.
They
it's
were not only not giving her... They weren't giving her the right medication. They were substituting medication. They were substituting dosages. They were acting on their own.
Exactly.
And the consequences were not minor.
They were not minor. Scared me to death. And she, of course, came back to the hospital, and then the litany of what happened, this medicine is not good for me, et cetera. My daughter, the doctor, says, you know, that medicine is not good. They said to her, just take it. Because the dosage is different. It's different than the last one. Now, they supposedly changed the dosage. She got sick again. Now, this is the second time. The third time, she goes back to the hospital, and my younger daughter, the doctor, who was involved the whole time, finally got through to them, and I hope that yesterday she had a conversation with the doctors in the prison, and they loosened up on their control of her records. Now, imagine they're saying that we're concerned about control of records when one of the things that we know, the insurance companies have been using people's records to deny them health care. It's a terrible situation. Every conversation you have is listened into. But they were nervous about our daughter, the doctor, a brilliant, darling doctor, having Lynn Stewart's medical care without going through all of the proper procedures.
Well, the underlying politics of this are very straightforward. They're playing fast and loose in the prison, denying medication that was prescribed for Lynn, appropriate to her condition, concealing the fact that they were doing that, seeking to impose upon Lynn medication that was not appropriate for her, and with medical consequences arising, and then she's incommunicado, and when her cellmate seeks to inform Ralph of the fact that Lynn is not well and that this is going on, the prison then penalizes Lynn because her cellmate alerted Ralph to a condition that the prison was responsible for creating. This is sinister. This is not just incompetence. This is the prison industrial complex at work targeting a prisoner who is a primary objective of the American Imperium.
And so, therefore, as I said, mitigating circumstances to the attorneys, Lynn had gone to the hospital, and she hadn't returned. And a kind, decent cellmate risked everything to make a phone call to me. This wasn't to Bin Laden. It was to Ralph to say, your wife has not returned from the hospital. She is ill. So I alerted the attorneys. I guess they're sick of me calling them every minute. No, not every minute. I call them when I think it's appropriate. I called my daughter, the doctor, who has been very much involved. And through this involvement of everyone, it seems to be straightened out. But to penalize her for creating the situation that got it straight, and I say that the attorneys have heard from me, and my daughter has heard from me. My son and daughter, the attorneys, have heard from me, and they were involved. And it seems that we are at a level. Lynn has become herself again, but herself without 3 months of phone calls.
Okay, so now we need everyone to write to Counselor Hill, H-I-L-L, at the Metropolitan Correction Center, MCC, 150 Park.
Park, mm-hmm.
Park Row.
Park Row.
New York, New York, 10007. That's 1,000 and then a 7.
And
10007.
Yes.
Please also, we're approaching Valentine's Day, send your notes, your Valentine notes, to Lynn Stewart, again at MCC, 150 Park Row, New York, New York, 10007. Ralph, thanks a lot, and we'll
Thank
be having
so
another update with you next week.
And hopefully, and maybe Lynn will be able to call direct.
That would be absolutely wonderful.
Okay, thank you, Ralph and Maya.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, and now to the excerpt from the ongoing war against the Haitian people. We're playing two excerpts from this, the first CD. There's a slight musical interlude between them, and I think you're going to be impressed. Please call while they're playing, 212-209-2950, and after the excerpt, we'll be back and continue our discussion.
With Haitian President Jean-Bertrand Aristide whisked away by U.S. forces to the Central African Republic, businessmen, nearly all of them speaking English, from years spent vacationing in Miami or studying in New England, with military training, all of them with weapons, are out on patrol. Their M4s, their Tech-9s, and their 9mm at the ready, going throughout City Soleil and other neighborhoods in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. Armed businessmen work with the police to dig out the self-defense squads of the Haitian people, reports the San Francisco Chronicle on March 2nd. The ongoing war against the Haitian masses is our program today. How did the most mobilized people throughout the Caribbean become demobilized so that a group of 200 armed thugs, armed by the Central Intelligence Agency, trained by the Defense Intelligence Agency, establish a coup in Haiti?
We're talking, of course, about the Tentant-Macoute aftermath and the FROP. The killer squads, the death squads, the drug traffickers about whom much has been stated and written. But believe me, brothers and sisters, this is not about drugs. Drugs, indeed, are the fluid and the integument through which the killer squads are given incentive and mobilized. But the drug centers into the United States are across the Caribbean. They're in Haiti. They're in the Cayman Islands, they're in the Bahamas, they're in the Keys of Miami, they're in Panama and they're in Central America, they're in Mexico itself, they are in Mena, Arkansas. Drugs, drugs, drugs indeed. $1 trillion a year in profit that is laundered in every bank in the United States, it is true. But the song of Haiti is the song of repression and the counter-revolution and the attempt to demobilize the most militant, the most mobilized, the most permanent mass struggle in the Americas. 200-year anniversary of the Haitian Revolution this January, the very moment when these death squad killers were mobilized by the Central Intelligence Agency and their masters.
The rebel paramilitary army crossed the border from the Dominican Republic in early February. Le Front pour l'Avancement et le Progrès de Haiti, the FRAP, the plainclothes death squadrons involved in mass killings and political assassinations during the CIA-sponsored 1991 coup, which led to the first overthrow of the democratically elected government of President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. And joining them, the Front pour la Libération et la Reconstruction Nationale, the FLRN, that's the National Liberation and Reconstruction Front, which is led by Guy Philippe, a former member of the Haitian Armed Forces and a former police chief. He had been trained in the 1991 coup years by U.S. Special Forces in Ecuador. And then there's Emmanuel Constant, nicknamed Toto. He created the FRAP while he was on the CIA payroll, and he had been a former Tentant-Macoute. As well, there's Jodel Chamblin, another former Tentant-Macoute. Makut. These are people who've been responsible for massacres throughout the years. And now, sponsored by the U.S., they led a rebellion. But they admittedly have only a few hundred forces, joined by businessmen, such as we mentioned before, who are forming their own paramilitaries. But how did these people come to power? It is a saga that we should go into to show what has happened with the mobilization of the Haitian masses that brought down the 30-year dictatorship of Duvalier, sponsored by the United States. And yet the Haitian masses brought it down. And time and time again, their mobilizations have resisted the power of the International Monetary Fund and the attempts, with the collaboration of Jean-Bertrand Aristide, to align Haiti with the IMF. The compliance, the complicity, and yet through the resistance of the Haitian masses, this could not be done. Let's go to January 1986. For 30 years, the Duvalier family had terrorized Haiti with its ruthless rule, sustained solely by the Tonton-Macoutes' permanent death squads, torturing and murdering tens of thousands of the Haitian poor, the dissidents, the workers, the peasants, the trade unionists, students, and members of religious orders. Haiti, at the time, had infant mortality that exceeded 1 out of 10. Only 2 out of 10 Haitians could read or write. There were only 3,600 hospital beds and 800 doctors for a population that in 1986 numbered 6 million. The productive base of the country had been so stifled that less than 1%, that's only 60,000 of the population, were employed. Others were marginal workers or peasants. In January 1986, there was the slaughter of 3 children in Gonaïves, and this precipitated waves of demonstrations, which culminated in a mass revolt, which did not abate until the departure of then-president for life, Jean-Claude Baby Doc Duvalier, who had succeeded by installing himself after the death of his father, François Papa Doc Duvalier, in 1971. The sentiment of the mass movement was clear. They went after the Tonton Macoutes. A 3-person junta seized power and placed Lieutenant General Henri Namphy as the head of state. Yet the mobilization continued. 1 year later, on September 11, 1988, a massacre took place at the Church of Saint Jean Bosco, the church of the Roman Catholic priest Jean-Bertrand Aristide. It was his parish in the heart of Port-au-Prince, and it was the center of the Petite L'Église, the little church which was the voice of the poor, crystallizing itself in defined social goals. And along with the Petite L'Église, you had peasants forming impromptu committees. They initiated takeovers. There was a mass mobilization. Assemblies were taking place throughout Haiti. And after the attacks on Saint Jean Bosco, the mass mobilization continued.
Mass mobilization has been a permanent feature of Haitian life. It was a constant undercurrent of the dictatorship of both Papa Doc Duvalier and Baby Doc. It was the contingent, which was the predicate for the continuous introduction of death squads and military dictatorship by the U.S. attempting to suppress this mass movement. And indeed, it was only demobilized over a sustained period of time, paradoxically, by the success in enlisting Jean-Bertrand Aristide as the vehicle for implementing the program of the International Monetary Fund and austerity in Haiti. As recently as 2001, 1 million people still mobilized when there was the prospect of a coup against Jean-Bertrand Aristide. As recently as last September and October in 2003, hundreds of thousands of people mobilized across Haiti. And yet, 200 thugs of the Defense Intelligence Agency and the Central Intelligence Agency were able to take Cap Hessien and, indeed, Gonaïves. Reflecting, as Alan Nairn, the noted reporter in The Nation who has documented so much of the role of the Central Intelligence Agency and the DEA death squads in Haiti, as Alan Nairn noted, the collaboration of Jean-Bertrand Aristide in implementing the most drastic austerity on record in implementing the program of the INF, of assuming office without power on behalf, let it be said, of the United States authorities who made this the condition of permitting him to assume this office without power, the relentless driving down of the survival possibilities of the masses has been the means through which they have been demobilized to the point where 200 thugs could take power in a country where the masses are armed with machetes at the very least, and who in one moment could have swept away the FROP if there was indeed the will to do so, as opposed to the demoralization experienced by the betrayals of the Aristide government itself. Brothers and sisters, my address to the International Conference Against Repression in Haiti on November 7, 1992, a conference that brought out, with the death squads in the countryside, the leaders of the mass movement, and particularly our brother to whom this program is dedicated, Cajus Lexiuste, the General Secretary of the Haitian Confederation of Workers, who is so central in the organizing of these efforts and of this conference. Brothers and sisters, this is a historic occasion. This is the first time in the history of Haiti that an international conference defending the Haitian people against repression and the most brutal and systematic denial of the democratic rights has ever occurred on Haitian soil. And this is an astonishing fact that in itself reveals the fate of Haiti at the hands of the colonial and imperial powers. Ever since the Haitian masses under Toussaint Louverture defeated the armies of Napoleon, world imperialism has been determined to subjugate Haiti, to inflict total misery on its people, and above all to quarantine the Haitian people, to isolate them from all other populist struggles in the world. There are fundamental reasons for this cruel, deliberate, and cynical victimization of the Haitian people. Toussaint Louverture and the Haitian masses first broke the hold of colonialism. Here was an African people rising up against slavery and colonial subjugation at a time when slavery prevailed in the United States, Cuba, and Brazil, when all over Latin America they suffered Spanish and Portuguese colonial terror. The meaning of colonial conquest was nowhere better understood than in Haiti itself. In 1492, nearly 4 million indigenous people inhabited what is now Haiti and the Dominican Republic, what came to be called Hispaniola. Within less than 10 years, 4 million people were reduced to 34,000. The genocide that unfolded in Haiti was a rehearsal for Latin America. When the Spanish, British, French, Portuguese reached South America, the Aztec, Mayan, and Inca and indigenous peoples numbered over 100 million. Within one century, there were no more than 3 million survivors. The indigenous workers exploited to work in one single mine in Potosí, Bolivia, filled a cemetery with 8 million corpses. In 1560, 186 tons of gold and 16,000 tons of silver had been extracted from Peru and Mexico alone at a value at the time of billions of dollars. The slave system was necessary to replace 100 million people who had been exterminated. 15 million African slaves perished in transit to Brazil alone. 10 million survived to become slaves in Brazil. Every noble family of Europe owes its position, its social station, and its wealth to this butchery, for this was the surplus value that allowed the Industrial Revolution. The industry, the cities, the museums and libraries, the very fabric of European industrial society under capitalism, are built upon the resources and the labor and the extermination of the indigenous peoples. It was constructed through the death of 50 million Africans in the Americas alone, the slaughter of families, the torture, the burials alive, the destruction of children, the unending agony of countless minutes and hours and days and weeks and months and years and decades and centuries are the real root of the world capitalist order, of its wealth and of its dominance. This is the meaning of the revolution of Toussaint Louverture. The Haitian people rose up alone against this vast system of death and defeated the same Napoleon who had conquered the continent of Europe. The shockwaves of the Haitian Revolution swept the councils of state. Every slave owner in North and Latin America trembled at the mention of Toussaint Louverture. Simon Bolivar came to Haiti to learn the lessons of the guerrilla struggle waged by the Haitian masses. The anti-colonial struggle launched by Simon Bolivar was learned at the feet of Toussaint Louverture and the people of Haiti. And this is the origin of the first blockade of Haiti. Every colonial power in Europe, joined by the property-owning class in the United States, combined to blockade, starve, and isolate Haiti, to quarantine the Haitian people, to reduce them to misery and starvation, to prevent the spread of the Haitian Revolution, to preserve the slave order and the system of exploitation, to make the Haitian people an object lesson. The Monroe Doctrine itself was directed not only at European capitalism for control of Latin America. President Monroe declared that the United States would intervene at will to prevent any challenge to its hegemony in the Western Hemisphere and to prevent such events as had engulfed Haiti. In the United States today, where the United States Department of Commerce calculates that 1% of the population own and control 90% of the national wealth, we have a structure of power that requires the corporations and the intelligence agencies and the secret councils of state and that tiny oligarchy that controls 2/3 of the resources of the planet to visit its vengeance and its depredations upon the population of Haiti in particular. On October 1, 1992, a report from UNICEF revealed that poverty kills 40,000 children a day in Latin America, 181 million people living at the point of starvation. In the pursuit of profit, wages are driven down relentlessly. The IMF imposes the elimination of social services wherever they exist, and the U.S. banks ask the poor to pay for the cost of their exploitation. The continental debt to these banks is now $520 billion. It is to facilitate this plunder that the International Monetary Fund forces every government under U.S. control to impose even greater austerity, to increase the cost of food and basic staples, to reduce the meager wages of the people, all to pay the debt which puppet dictators owe the U.S. banks, and to pay it out of the flesh and blood of the people. This was the role of Mark Bazan. This was the United States mandate under Ambassador Alvin Adams. You know who he is, brothers and sisters. Adams, the director of the pacification program in Vietnam, the collaborator in the Phoenix program, the program of the official Zhang Lan Do of the United States rulers, the Makut in full-dress uniform, who tortured and assassinated 50,000 Vietnamese trade unionists, students, village leaders, and intellectuals. This is the same Alvin Adams who developed a protege named Prosper Avril, trained by U.S. Special Forces in military facilities in Quantico, Virginia, and in Scotia in Washington, D.C. Adams told Jean-Bertrand Aristide he would keep the Haitian army in the barracks if Aristide brought Cedrus in as chief of staff and implemented the program of the INF. Adams runs the Haitian army, let us be blunt. Cedrus would not go to the toilet without first consulting Alvin Adams. The coup d'etat of 20th of September, brothers and sisters, I assure you, was the handwork of Alvin Adams and the United States rulers. The reign of terror in the countryside bears the signature of the pacification run by Adams in Vietnam. The murder of popular peasant leaders, the unbridled terror against the workers and peasants, the Zhang Lan Do, the Makut, the brutal kidnapping of tens of thousands of Haitian refugees on the high seas, this is the pitiless policy designed for Haiti by the rulers of imperialism from the moment of the triumph of Toussaint Louverture. And this is the importance, brothers and sisters, to maintain the mass mobilization. This is the significance of not allowing this rule to go unopposed. This is the meaning of preventing the isolation of the Haitian people, the real conspiracy of imperialism. The Haitian struggle for democracy is a revolutionary struggle because today human rights, democratic control, freedom for people to exercise their will, the aspiration of working people for a better life threaten a capitalist order which depends on terror everywhere and nowhere more than Haiti. Ours is one struggle, and the Haitian people are a light that illuminates the darkness. Long live the flame that was lit at the time of Toussaint Louverture, and that will never be extinguished.
Okay, I heard one phone call. Now it's time for all of you to get on the phone, 212-209-2950. Our gift to you in support of WBAI and the 9 years of programming, and we expect 9 more years and even more of taking aim, is 2 CDs, The Ongoing War Against the Haitian People. You've heard just an 18-minute excerpt from that 80-minute CD, and another 80-minute CD, An Unnatural Catastrophe, The U.S. Crucifixion of Haiti. Again, 212-209-2950. Please, get on the phone right away.
And brothers and sisters, that talk which I gave in Haiti at the time that Lambe Brath and Dennis Surrette and Maya and I and the Haitian trade union movement and the leaders of the peasant organizations organized that conference in Port-au-Prince described the reality that fits exactly the pattern of repression and butchery that's unfolding today. On the 8th of February, 2010, Ashley Smith wrote an article called "The U.S. is Reviving What Haitians Call the Plan of Death." 1 month after the devastating earthquake, Haiti continues to suffer, he writes, under apocalyptic conditions. More than 200,000 people injured, 250,000 killed, 3 million dependent on assistance for water and housing, and contrary to the puff pieces in the media, the relief operation is a miserable failure. Amid this catastrophe, the imperial powers and corporate vultures, he writes, are circling, eyeing the profits to be made. The Street, an investment website, published an article called "An Opportunity to Heal Haiti." And that article lays out how U.S. corporations will cash in on the catastrophe. Here are the companies, they write, that will benefit: General Electric, Caterpillar, Deere, Fluor, Jacobs Engineering. Brothers and sisters, this programming delineates the slaughter, the oppression, the ongoing misery that is inflicted upon the Haitian people, and now the plan of death that visits upon the Haitian people in even more intensive exploitation in the wake of this earthquake. Brothers and sisters, arm yourselves with the information, because this struggle is an ongoing one, and the word of the Haitian people will yet be heard. Heard in struggle, heard in resistance, heard in the arms that are necessary to complete that struggle and carry it through to its conclusion. It is a process that engulfs not only the people of Haiti, but the oppressed everywhere, brothers and sisters. And that's why this is the touchstone of our resistance. Our obligation is to maintain that struggle in all ways that are open to us. Please support these efforts to elucidate what's at stake here.
212-209-2950. It was on January 1st, 1804, that General Jean-Jacques Dessalines, who was one of the protégés of Toussaint Louverture, declared the independence of Haiti. And it is from that moment that there has been the enormous assault against this incredible revolt by the slaves on this tiny island. It had to, first, there was the agreement with the French to pay back the, to recompense the owners of the plantations, the plantation owners who had created an ecological disaster in Haiti, cutting down 75% of the trees on the island in order to create vast plantations. And this debt, which was repaid, the repayment went on until 1947. Incredible. And what happened when Jean-Bertrand Aristide assumed the presidency with a massive outpouring of support of the Haitian people? He assumed the Duvalier debt, the $800 million Duvalier debt, not incurred by the Haitian people, but given by the international banks to support the dictatorship over the Haitian people. And yet, this is where most of the Haitian income, the gross national product, has been siphoned over the years of the Haitian budget, $90 million budget each year, $80 million of it coming from the international banks, $50 million of that goes to the repayment of the debt. And a great deal of the other money goes to non-governmental organizations. As we outline in these programs, one of the important moves of the United States was to destroy the infrastructure, the social net, the government of Haiti. 212-209-2950. This is methodical, it is detailed, it is passionate, and there's nowhere else that you're going to get this information as presented by Ralph and myself. 212-209-2950. It's a two CD set, full CDs, The Ongoing War Against the Haitian People and an Unnatural Catastrophe, The U.S. Crucifixion of Haiti. Keep those phones ringing. We have people in the pledge room, 212-209-2950. We have only until 5 o'clock today, or just before 5 when the news, 6 o'clock when the news goes on, and this is your opportunity. It's your only opportunity. Ralph?
During the 1970s and 80s, brothers and sisters, the U.S. used the dictatorship of baby Doc Duvalier to impose what the International Monetary Fund called a structural adjustment program. That is what the Haitians call the plan of death. They opened up the Haitian economy to subsidize U.S. agricultural exports and rice and undermine the Haitian peasants' ability to feed themselves, let alone compete on the market. They set up an export processing zone in the capital city to take advantage of new cheap labor. Well, what do you think is the program as we speak? The New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof 2 days ago spelled out what he called a humanitarian initiative. The best strategy for Haiti, he writes, is sweatshops. Sweatshops may sound horrific to Americans, but it's a strategy that has worked for other countries, such as Bangladesh. And Haitians in the slums will tell you that their most fervent wish is for jobs. A few dozen major sweatshop factories would be transformational for Haiti, he writes. It sounds like a sick parody, does it not, brothers and sisters? But that is precisely what the New York Times and what James Dobbins, the special envoy to Haiti under President Clinton, wrote in the New York Times 2 days ago. This disaster is an opportunity to accelerate too long delayed reforms. As director of the International Security and Defense Policy Center at the RAND Corporation, he advocates the following.
Ralph, I'm going
privatization to pad corporate profits. Quote unquote, that's the agenda. That's the little continuation of the exploitation and the imposition of mass misery upon the Haitian people, brothers and sisters.
212-209-2950. Please get on the phone, support WBAI, support taking aim. We wouldn't be on the air if it weren't for WBAI and your contributions to WBAI that keep the station flowing 24/7 with news, with arts, with public affairs. Please, 212-209-2950. We want to hear a steady stream of calls. It's a two CD set, tightly edited, as you heard from the two small excerpts we played. Remember, that was only 18 minutes. From an 80-minute CD, you can imagine what the rest of it is. The Ongoing War Against the Haitian People. You will be astonished at the information. And also, An Unnatural Catastrophe, The U.S. Crucifixion of Haiti. These are CDs that you're going to want to listen to over and again, maintain in your library, and share with your friends, your families, and your colleague. 212-209-2950. Again, we're on only until 6 o'clock. This is your opportunity. You must get on the phones now. If you find that the phones are busy, pause a moment and then redial 212-209-2950.
That's right, Maya and Ralph. Thank you so much. The phones are ringing. They're really ringing off the hook right now. We have 8, 9 calls on the line, almost 10 calls. That's right, a full board. So why don't you outline the premium once again? People are really responding to this premium. If no one is picking you up right away, please be patient. As we approach the top of the hour and we go into the evening news, you can still make your calls. But right now, Ralph and Maya are going to tell you about the premium. The number is 212-209-2950. And these premiums that they're talking about, they're thank you gifts to you for supporting WBAI, for supporting Taking AIM with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. 212-209-2950. Ralph, Maya?
Right, Michael. These really are our gifts to you. I put in a lot of hours to make these the most intense programming that you can have. The ongoing war against the Haitian people is an outline of the history of Haiti, but also it addresses, most importantly, how did this coup against Jean-Bertrand Aristide take place in 1991? How was it that 200 thugs, armed thugs, backed by the CIA and the Defense Intelligence Agency, how could they take over the country? A country where millions of people had put into power a government that was to be their reflection, which was going to be a government for their own self-determination. And again, what happened in 1994 when again, Aristide came into power in Ralph?
Well, he imposed even what Alan Nairn described as the most severe austerity measure ever inflicted upon the Haitian people. It went even beyond what Bazin had demanded on behalf of the IMF. And I want to emphasize, brothers and sisters, that the legacy of this rape of Haiti continues. The 14 so-called Friends of Haiti, who met just now at a UN-convened conference, included Haitian Prime Minister Jean-Max Belrive to give the facade and appearance of support for the Haitian people. And here's how the Guardian described it in London. Even as the corpses remain under the earthquake's rubble, and the government operates out of a police station, and the U.S. military controls the capital and the airport, these assembled friends would not commit to canceling Haiti's $1 billion debt to the metropolitan powers. Instead, they agreed to a 10-year plan and a commitment to meet this debt and the interest payments while the bodies buried across the countryside are left unattended to an unspecified time in the future. The Guardian on the reality of the IMF, the reality of the imperial agenda.
And Ralph, in these programs, we discuss the role of Raymond Kelly, the New York Police Commissioner, who established the Haitian police when Jean-Bertrand Aristide was president, a Haitian police that was not under Aristide's control, but was under the control of the United States and incorporated the Tonton Macoutes, the very assailants of the Haitian people. And this, we go into a lot of this detail, but also particularly in these programs, we discuss the role of non-governmental organizations and how they undermine, how specifically they undermine the will and the self-determination of the Haitian people. When you have $66 million being raised in an evening of the concerts that appeared on all the stations, where is the $66 million going?
It's going to the administrators of the Red Cross. And by the way, brothers and sisters, on February 9th, the following article, hunger sparks growing resistance in Haiti. Haiti saw one of its largest protests since the earthquake. As 4 weeks after the disaster, frustration and rage continue with homelessness and hunger mounting. Tens of thousands of demonstrators marched through the streets of Pétionville, a Port-au-Prince suburb, denouncing the mayor, Lee Desparents, for hoarding food for sale and not distributing it to the hungry. Congregating at the front of a municipal building, the demonstrators chanted, "If the police shoot at us, we will burn everything," Reuters reported. "We are hungry. We are dying of hunger," the marchers told the news agency. "Lee Desparents keeps the rice. They don't give us anything." Pétionville, up the mountain from the capital, the preserve of Haiti's economic elite, is now the arena in which shanty towns are giving rise to mass demonstrations, brothers and sisters. And when former U.S. President Bill Clinton returned to Haiti, he was met by protests as thousands gathered outside the judicial police headquarters, the makeshift headquarters of the Haitian government during Clinton's visit there, to denounce him. Our children are burning in the sun. We have a right to tents. We have a right to shelter. One protester mentor, Natasha, 30, a mother of two, told Agence France-Presse, "This struggle is only beginning to unfold. Brothers and sisters, let us speak truth to power. Arm ourselves with the reality of this repression and this misery as the people themselves are constant in their resistance."
212-209-2950. Let's say that a word that would most signify this two CD set is demystification. Demystify the history of Haiti and demystify what you're hearing over and over on the press, that the Haitian people are helpless, that the Haitian people are the agents of their own poverty, of the destruction of the ecology of Haiti, that it's the fault of the Haitian people, that they are incapable. This is so far from the truth, and it is the crux of what we discuss in these two CDs, the ongoing war against the Haitian people.
Way to go. That's absolutely terrific, Ralph and Maya, Ralph Shoman and Maya Shone. The ongoing war against the Haitian people. A two CD set for $75. We thank you so much. The phones have calmed down a bit now. In the final few moments of Taking Aim, we need to raise about, I would say another $1,600, and we can do that in just a few minutes as we approach the top of the hour. We can do that. We can get those $1,600 if you make that call now. If you've been listening to what's been going on, what's been taking place here on Taking Aim with Ralph Shoman and Maya Shone, and you haven't made that call, we need your support right now. We need you to overwhelm our volunteers with your calls of support to 212-209-2950. Remember, you can use your Visa card, your MasterCard, American Express, and you can pledge using on the installment if you'd like to do that, if you need to do that. Talk to the people in the tally room right now. They're waiting for you to call. It's just about 5 minutes left that we have before the end of the program. We'll be going to the evening news after that. Ralph Shoman and Maya Shone.
Michael, you did it. You got the phone.
That's what we needed to do. That's what we needed to do. Go ahead, Ralph.
I think the part of the problem is people are calling, and in the pledge room they're overwhelmed, and so people give up.
Don't give up. Right.
Redial. Some of you have automatic redial on your phones, but if you don't, it's just a few numbers to press with your fingers. 212-209-2950. And also, as the news goes on, still continue to call. The ongoing war against the Haitian people, an unnatural catastrophe, the U.S. crucifixion of Haiti. As it now stands, we're not scheduled to be on next week, so this is your opportunity. Please call now. We will be back Tuesday, February 23rd, perhaps with this premium, perhaps with another. So now is your opportunity. Let's show each and every one of you, let's show WBAI how much this information means.
15 calls on the line now, Maya and Ralph. 15 calls right now.
Okay, I think that'll overwhelm them in the pledge room. Keep those calls coming.
Please be patient.
Please be patient. Let your phone ring.
And when Bill Clinton was confronted by the masses, this is what he said. "Well, I don't really want to be the de facto colonial governor of Haiti." He says, "I want to avoid that. You can trust me not to be a neocolonialist. I'm too old." And meanwhile, Colonel Gregory Kane, the operations officer for the U.S. task force in Haiti, stated, "We are in Haiti as long as necessary. We will be here on a permanent basis." Colonel Gregory Kane, brothers and sisters, neocolonialist Governor Bill Clinton.
People must think the Haitian people have no memory at all, because it was under Bill Clinton that the staged coups against Jean-Bertrand Aristide took place. And Bill Clinton is the one who imposed the most onerous conditions on the people of Haiti.
And so it continues, but the masses respond, and let's respond together with them, brothers and sisters. Please call. Get the premium. This is an ongoing struggle, and we are going to continue with this reporting and this description and this mobilizing to our brothers and sisters who are listening to taking aim into WBAI and who are supporting our Mother Courage, Lynn Stewart, in this fight back against the forces of repression in our own society.
Remember, send your Valentine to Lynn Stewart. Lynn Stewart, that's at MCC 150 Park Row, New York, New York, 10007. And also, have your Valentine for WBAI and yourself. This two-CD set, The Ongoing War Against the Haitian People and an Unnatural Catastrophe, The U.S. Crucifixion of Haiti, 212-209-2950. Keep the calls coming. And now stay tuned for the WBAI News.
And thanks so much to Michael G., as always.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. It's always a pleasure coming on and helping pitch and raising funds for this very, very strong program, Taking Aim, with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. The evening news is upcoming in just a moment, so stay tuned for that.